I think we're about time to start for the next talk. So I'm from I'm Floris. I work at Number Zero, where we build Iro, and we kind of embraced Quick for this. And specifically, like last year, I talked about how we wanted to go from normal single path Quick to Quick multipath. And so this year I want to talk a bit more about that experience and what we sort of learned along those things. I won't talk too much about Iro, but essentially the goal that we want to have is like that we want fast and reliable connections anywhere, and we want them to be peer-to-peer, so like anyone can accept connections, incoming connections, regardless of where you are on the internet, even when you're at a home device at home or something. So this means you have to do, we want to do peer-to-peer, and peer-to-peer means you want to do hole punching. That kind of pushed us towards, hole punching is kind of a lot easier on UDP, so that kind of pushed us towards UDP, and then users don't really want the unreliability of UDP, so enter Quick, I guess. So that's kind of the story of how we ended up on Quick, sorry. All right, sorry. Yeah, so and the basic architecture kind of Iro in to some sense. It's like we do have like inherently multiple paths, which is why we kind of inherently were drawn to like wanting Quick multipath, because we want, like, if you have like typical setup, you have like two devices in a home network or something, you can't establish the direct IP connections to them normally. Normally those require hole punching. I'm touching slightly a little bit on hole punching at the end. But mostly not. But the relay connection is sort of like you make, if each device makes a connection to the relay server, we do this via HTTPS, upgrade to a WebSocket, and then we can like transport UDP datagrams via the relay server to each other. And the general idea is that we use that to kind of establish the connection, if you can't establish it immediately direct, and then we do hole punching coordination over that, and then you get the other pass. So we have like inherently several paths. Typically these days you get IPv4, IPv6 if everything goes well. But the reason we want to kind of go to multipath is that each path has its own properties, right? We just talked about congestion control. Each path has its own congestion controller. And with single path you don't have this. Like you start on one of the paths, the traffic goes through the path, and then you switch to another path, and then your congestion controller has to like restart, figure everything out again. If you switch back as you move through networks, the congestion controller loses all that state, loss detection, etc., loses all that state. So that's not ideal. So that's kind of what drives us to that. Another important part for us is that Quick also has inherently this protects against linkability between different paths. So if you have, like, if you're sending packets via for the same connection via two different paths, or Quick tries to like avoid showing that these packets are actually related to the same connection. That is something that we didn't have in the single path Quick version, so that was also kind of a reason for us. So multipath is kind of an IETF draft. It's actually like, I think, maybe the last version of the draft by now. They even have the IANA numbers now. This is the full title for it, but it kind of only specifies the wire protocol. It only says like, how do you build packets, how do you send them, how do you decode them on the other side. It doesn't really talk about how you send data over the various paths, or how you decide to do that. That is kind of very much still left up to the application. So it doesn't solve all the problems, but it gives you tools to have an interoperable kind of wire protocol, at least, which is a very good start. Before we go into kind of multipath, we need to talk about paths in Quick itself, RFC 9000. So Quick already had the notion of a path in a way, and it's mostly existed because the usually you have like a client, or the original design of like HTTP/3 was like you have a client behind a NAT and you have like server in your data center. That's not what we want, but that's the original design. So the client, the NAT could get rebound. Like if your connection is idle for like a minute or something, and then you suddenly start sending packets again, the NAT could have already decided that that flow was already the first flow was already finished, so it has to rebind a new NAT mapping, and then suddenly the server sees like valid packets coming from somewhere that isn't the client, but it looks like it is the client. So what the server had to do is like send this, it has to validate that this is actually the real same client. And validating that means like knowing it's the same TLS, it can still control the TLS identity. The reason to validate this is that this can also like be an on-path attack or something, or where you suddenly pretend you're sending to, sending from somewhere else, and then you can like potentially redirect a lot of data to some innocent victim on the internet somewhere. And that's kind of why this path challenge kind of mechanism already exists. And NAT rebinding is kind of the primary reason for this. And path challenge is kind of like identifying that this is still the right peer you're talking to, and they are now just on a new address. So that looks something like this, like assuming that your client is originally sending from like the first address, it's sending data, then at some point the client is going to be unaware of this. So at some point it just starts sending again, like stream frame in this case, like application data. it's just going to appear from a new path. So the server has to do this path challenge thing, client has to send the path response. The client has to make sure that this comes back from the same address that it receives from, which will be important in a second, but right now the client doesn't really know about this yet. It's just blissfully unaware. It just sends a response. These packets have to be padded to like 1200 bytes payload at least. You get like the IP header overhead on top of that. And that's kind of to make sure that the path is actually capable of carrying traffic in that is like datagrams that is big enough to be usable. So it's like gives you a full idea that the path is actually usable. Only when this path validation has succeeded can the server start sending on this new path. Like for our implementation of multipath, we are writing everything in Rust, and we started from the Qwin Rust library, and this is kind of the migration that it supported inside the data structures. There is, however, like even still in RFC 9000, that is not the limit of what you can do. Like only the client is allowed to migrate, only the client is allowed to migrate, but that doesn't mean it can only do involuntary migrations. It can also actually knowingly migrate. For example, like a common situation is like when you have a mobile phone with Wi-Fi and mobile data interfaces. In theory, what the client is allowed to do is like it can start, if it is aware of this, it can actually already try and validate essentially the other path. So it could try and validate the path for the second interface if it's originally been sending on the first address. It can try and like set its source address as the second interface, and it can do a path challenge. As long as it only puts like path challenge and a few very small amounts of allowed frames in there, it only counts as this thing that is called like a probing packet. And probing packets don't actually switch the path to the new one, like you saw in the involuntary migration. This means that the client can already verify this path. The other thing to notice is that, like, I added this path challenge on the way back. Like, the server can also, like, it's received this probing packet, so it knows it doesn't need to switch the path, the client doesn't need to switch, but it can also already start to validate this path by putting its own path challenge in, because only the person that the side that receives the response actually knows that it's validated, and both sides need to know that it's validated. So you need these three packets before you can fully validate. Then if you have like two parts validated, or you could even like pre-validate like more parts if you wanted. I'm not sure if anyone actually implemented that fully. But then you're still sending on the first path, and then you like switch to the next path by sending something that is not a programming packet. In this example, ping, but like it doesn't really matter, right? But that switch is kind of like happens like suddenly. You just like switch to the new path, and now you're on that path. And now you're probably when you do that, you reset your congestion controller states, etc. And then they build up their knowledge again from there. This kind of brings us to like how multipath models things, because in multipath, they bring in the notion of a path ID, and the path ID is essentially just extending the packet number spaces. So in original Qwik, you got like three packet number spaces, like the and a packet number space is literally just like the packet number. Like you start at one, it keeps incrementing with every packet you send. Qwik never resends the same packet. Also in case of loss, it builds a new packet with the data that was lost in it, but the packet number will always increment. The initial handshake is like the spaces are like very early on. Most of the stuff is in the data space, and that packet number just like keeps incrementing. So for Qwik to be able to like really get good loss detection signals and congestion control signals, they wanted to have the packet numbers for each part separately, which is why they decided to split the packet number spaces up per path ID. It also affects the crypto how you encrypt the packets. Originally, it was just done with the nonce was like just from the packet number, and now it includes the path ID. But the combination of this basically should also never be reused for the cryptography as well, because if you reuse your nonce, that's not very good. So these spaces and packet number spaces are actually like quite difficult to manage in a way. So the reason is that the mapping kind of was very difficult. From before multipath to after multipath, the space is like if you kind of skip over initial and handshake space, because you don't really spend very long in there. But the data you kept per path essentially, and a path is ideally you want to keep your congestion controller straight and all that. Per four tuples, so like IP and port, source and destination. But also like the space ID also contains a crypto key. So each, especially during the handshake, you have cryptographic keys to encrypt the very first packet in Qwik, that are just like for the client hello, then the server hello from TLS is kind of encrypted with different keys, and then finally you have the final keys that the rest of the connection is kind of encrypted with. So you have to derive these three sets of keys at the beginning as well, and they are still like this whole notion of like multipath splits the packet number spaces into more packet number spaces doesn't really map fully one to one to that, because the cryptographic keys for the entire data space stay the same even in multipath. So we had to like you end up having to split this data in very awkward. Or at least in the implementation we had, in very awkward ways. The perf connection data, like path data, which contains congestion controller, etc., it only had like the version now and like the previous version. And the reason to have like the previous version is to like protect against basically someone faking a migration. So the thing that you did there was like when you observe the migration as a server, you would still kind of try and path validate both the new and the old path. And then if the old path is still validated, then you know that someone was trying to fake a migration. And you can sort of recover quickly. So that's why you have like this previous path data stuff as well. this Kingsley Clive to connection identifiers is kind of the next big thing in that you need to be aware of in multipath. Because the problem is, like, where do packets come from? The way to do that, so because of this migration, right, you have this involuntary migration that can happen. Packets could suddenly come in from a different IP address. So you can't use that to know which connection a packet belongs to, because that can suddenly change. So Qwik solves this with CIDs, connection IDs. It's essentially a small byte array in the packet header, or some fixed offset. Depends on the header used, but essentially on some fixed offset. And that means that you can use that when you see a packet coming in from your socket, you can look at that connection ID and go, oh, that belongs to that connection, that belongs to that connection. But this means also that, because it is on the receiving side that you do this, the sender side has to know the CID that you want. And so you have to issue the CIDs, which is like with the new connection ID frames. In multipath, that's the new path new connection ID. And the headers actually are completely unchanged in multipath Qwik. So the way to do it is basically you issue CIDs for each path ID. So the state of the CIDs kind of gets multiplied by every path you want to have. But the very one of the interesting consequences in implementing this is that CIDs, the way when you had a single path, the way they were issued, you only ever issue a you always have a CID essentially from your peer, because the peer is sending to the way the connection is set up, you could never end up without a CID. Occasionally you wanted to rotate CIDs, like when you have been idle for like a minute or something, you might as well go, well, let's rotate the CIDs, because why not? And in the worst case, you couldn't do that if you didn't have more spare CIDs. In multipath now, if you want to start sending on a new path, even when you receive the packet on that new path, you may not be able to send, because you just might not have CIDs yet. And that fallibility kind of has also acquired a lot of impact in the implementation. So, which brings us to like opening paths, like managing paths, I guess. So opening path, now we know how you can like send the packet on a specific path and all the sort of consequences that come with it. Like opening path is the state that you have to kind of track per path is kind of tricky as well firstly, like only clients are allowed to open path, which is kind of easy from like that carries on from like RFC 9000, right? Where only clients were allowed to migrate. It kind of simplifies a lot of design, but it's a little bit annoying for us. But we can generally work around, because we want to be peer-to-peer, right? We want both sides to be equal, but we can sort of work around this. Like the client is always the one that starts the connection. So to open a path, the client has to send, well, or and decide, and has to send or receive, basically, packets on a new path ID. And that's all. It can even still be on the same for tuple, although you probably want to avoid that. But that's not enough to like fully have the open path, because each for tuple that you actually send and receive on also has to be validated on before you can start sending on it. So if you as a server suddenly receive a packet that happens to use the CID of a new path ID that wasn't used yet, you have to then go and validate, and only when all of that succeeds, then you can start using the path. Abandoning is kind of also, both sides can abandon a path for whatever reason. Coordination-wise, this is also tricky, because if you end up with no paths, you don't have a connection anymore. You have to be a bit careful there as well. So that kind of gets you to like the last challenge of multipath, I guess, that I'll talk about, which is like packet scheduling. Is like, well, what do you actually like? If you have data to send, you have to put your pending data that you want to send. You have to decide where to send it to. This depends on whether there is any congestion control window and things like that, whether you have CIDs. This is kind of like awkward to decide. Like the way we decided to do this for now, initially at least, we will improve on this later. But initially, we only want to send to a single remote at a time, like as the primary. This path status path backup available is kind of a mechanism in multipath that is kind of entirely advisory, and we send it, but we don't really use it. I'm being told my time is up. Packet scheduling is sort of like you have to balance all those things and not do too many checks up front, but still kind of manage to send your packet on a path that can actually send them or decide to wait. There's a few trade-offs there. The thing that I didn't get around to, how we then use multipath with quick NAT traversal, it's basically using path challenges to do hole punching, but I'll be kind and skip past that. Apologies.
Okay, so thanks for that great talk, Floris. So we don't have any time for questions, but maybe you can just catch them in the hallway or some other time.